The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Midday, midweek, like it. Doing our thing. Patrick Corbin last night was so good. Guys, have you been in that space where you're running around doing things, you have to take a game in by radio? And that was me last night. I was trying to be a good son. Someday we're going to do a show. I don't know if I'm going to do the whole show, but someday, because as guys, primarily guys consume this content. It doesn't mean it's not built. We don't build a show and say we don't want guys. We want a mass audience, and we have an audience. But guys get in this space in life where they've got to deal with moms that are aging. That's me. So someday I'm going to go deep into this. It's not going to be today because there's too much going on. But so I'm driving around last night doing all these things, and some of them were things that a good son does, and some were things that you're like, what are we doing here? But I was listening to the game last night and Patrick Corbin, and the game was fast. Man, that game last night was really fast. And Patrick Corbin was just blowing away the Giants. And Johnny Cueto on the other side, it's like an old-fashioned gunfight. These two guys are just out there saying, okay, yeah, I got you. No, you got me, and I got you, and so forth. They went back and forth. And so by the time it was done, it was only like 8:45, and Corbin just blowing through it. And Patrick Corbin, remember when the Diamondbacks were setting their rotation to start the season, there were eyebrows raised about Patrick Corbin. I'm going to get to that here in a bit. I did see the NBA playoffs on my DVR in the end of the Portland-New Orleans game last night. I'm so happy for Alvin Gentry. Should have never been let go here. Should never have. Well, there's lots of things that should never happen with that team, that franchise. The Cardinals get started under Steve Wilks, and they're going to say things like, yeah, we're learning a whole new playbook, and it's really difficult, and it's really hard, and it's April. Got it. But I think the big story outside of Mike Budenholzer meeting with the Suns is the injuries with the Diamondbacks and just where they are. We'll have Mike Farron with us. Mike does a great job. He does a great job on SiriusXM MLB Network Radio, first and foremost. He does a great job on the Diamondbacks. Mike is uber super talented and a really good guy, too. So we'll have Mike Farron coming up at about 10:20. Let's get you caught up some things in my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most by logging on to Sagicor Now, guys. And that means protecting your family. Something were to happen to you, are you protected? Are they protected? Log on, get your free quote for life insurance. You've got to get your life insurance taken care of at some point. Do it now at SagicorNow.com. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. So a half of a swing by Brandon Belt has kept Patrick Corbin away from yet another opportunity at a no-hitter. It's his second one-hitter of the season. When you look at the Diamondbacks rotation back in March, and fans were trying to guess who would be the opening day starting pitcher, and it should be Zach Greinke, or it could be Robbie Ray. And when it was Patrick Corbin, there were a lot of eyebrows raised, a lot of stuff on social media, a lot of people that I'd run into saying, wow, they're starting Corbin. Patrick Corbin is making himself a lot of money. Let's just start with that. Patrick Corbin, with his contract and his situation, he's making big bucks with every start that he's stepping out. He's gone out this season and just taken the job of being that opening day starter, which says we believe in you, and has just been a stranglehold. What's been interesting, though, is it's not just Corbin and then Ray and then Greinke. Taiwan Walker came here in the Gene Segura deal last season. He was a 500 pitcher. I thought there were times he pitched better than that. I like watching Taiwan Walker pitch, but he's hurt, a UCL injury. UCL injury typically, not always, typically leads to Tommy John. And so with that, the most interesting acquisition by the Diamondbacks they've already made. Do you know who that acquisition is? This acquisition is not going to be on the field this weekend. When it comes to Taiwan Walker's start, his spot in the rotation. Do you know who that acquisition is? That acquisition, when I heard about the Walker injury, it's where is Shelby Miller? How is Shelby Miller? How long till Shelby Miller is coming back? The last that I heard on Shelby Miller was sometime in late May, June, somewhere in that range. And that's always a moving target. They don't want to pin down and say, you know, by June 15th, Shelby Miller is going to be back here. If you were to make a trade out of guys within the rotation, As bad as Shelby was at times when he first got here, Shelby Miller did show me some things. And Shelby Miller being put into the rotation, if he's right, I get it. There's going to be skepticism about Shelby Miller. I'm going to talk to Mike about this in a few minutes. But suddenly, Shelby Miller has become a very important part of the Diamondbacks equation here in 2018. They have some young arms within their system. However, to try to rely on those guys to come in and catch lightning in a bottle typically doesn't happen. They still have a very good big three. I'm comfortable with Robbie Ray. I'm comfortable with Zach Greinke other than his price tag. And the fact they're off to the best start in the history of the franchise, but they just have a 2.5-game lead, you have to look at it and say there's a bit of a built-in cushion to at least start the season. This team is not going to go, famous last words, by the way, this team's not going to go out and lose 10 in a row. They're not. They're not built that way. Their pitching is really good. In fact, if you look around the franchise and see what's happened to them so far this season with the injuries to Lamb, Souza, Walker, Shelby not being back yet, they've had a lot of adversity. Teams that go through the adversity, it does make them stronger. There's no perfect team that just rolls right through and wins 162 of these bad boys. You're going to be a team that faces that losing streak. Inevitably, this team's going to lose 7 of 8. I think it was last July where all of a sudden they played like dog food. It was just not fun to watch in any way, shape, or form. They really scuffled after looking so good. That's just the way it goes in 162 games.
Yeah, you're going to hit some bumps in the road simply because it is a long season and these guys do get worn out and it is a grind and you're going to run into injuries and things like that. So not shocking, but really encouraged by the way this team has started. And it's interesting, Brad, you were saying you caught the game on the radio. I was with a buddy who was at a FedEx place last night mailing off his dad's birthday gift, and they had the game on the radio, and I happened to just kind of hear Patrick Corbin has a no-hitter through 7 innings. Yeah, and I looked at my watch, and I was like, okay, 6:40 first pitch. They're already 8:15. Through 7. Yeah, I was like 8:27 or something. I was like, how is that possible?
Well,
really moved.
And the thing about it is there's no competition for them in the market right now.
Nope.
Look, people are always going to pay attention to the NFL, but hearing Steve Wilks say, or even Fitz saying, we're learning, I'm swimming upstream, I've been studying all night and all that stuff, it's fine, but they're not playing. They didn't win last season. We'll see a week from tomorrow if they bring in a quarterback. If they don't bring in a quarterback, it'll basically be an off season of, it will be, other than Fitz being here. And so the baseball team has this tremendous opportunity to capture the market because we have no basketball to talk about in the postseason again. We have no hockey to talk about in the postseason again. And we have a baseball team that's really entertaining with a group of embraceable guys. You know, Eric, I've said this through the years. There's always a player on the team that fans want to get on or that fans don't like. And it's usually the closer, okay? It's usually that guy. So if it's Greg Olson who came in out of the bullpen when the door would swing open and he'd come in and people would joke about how he's bringing a gas can and matches along with his glove and his ball. Ole was that guy. BK was that guy. Last season, you know, Fernando Rodney was that guy. There's always someone. I think even Shill was that guy a little bit, even though he's a horse every fifth day. There were some fans that just didn't like his act. I can't look up and down this roster and say, wow, this is a player that fans really don't like and are not giving a chance and that they're going to boo his backside off. Now, when Shelby Miller comes back here, there's going to be some of those fans that will say, I need to see something out of Shelby Miller. I get it. But it's never clean during the course of a season. I've never seen a team that all 25 guys, and it'll end up being 35 or 40. You hope it's not 40, but there'll be 35 guys with call-ups and trades and all that stuff. To talk more about the Diamondbacks with Mike Farron here shortly. You know, the Suns are, I'm going to get more into the Suns at about 10:35. Anthony Davis, I'm watching him last night. And if Anthony Davis were not in New Orleans, Anthony Davis would be a mega, mega superstar MVP conversation guy. He just would be. And what we have to discuss here is when you're building a franchise as the Suns are trying to do, and when they're trying to convince a coach to come here, or to at least interview for the job. Dan Marley says, I'm not interested. Mike Budenholzer reportedly, I'm not going to argue with Woj, has a two-day interview with the Suns. If Budenholzer is ready to get out of his situation in Atlanta, and I see no reason why you could look at Atlanta and say, boy, I really want to be here with the Hawks rather than going to Phoenix, other than what is the owner going to do? That's the only thing that if coaches start turning down the Suns, it will have to have everything to do with the past of the owner and the reputation of the owner. Because you have Devin Booker and you have Josh Jackson and you have probably the number one lottery. You have everything in place. But if they start getting no's, like Dan's no to me was strike one, and it wasn't that big of a strike. You know, they reached out. He said no. I get it where he is right now. But if you start going down the list, like Frank Vogel's going to do nothing to inspire fans here. He's not. You have to have an inspiring hire. Steve Clifford, all these guys have been fired elsewhere. I get it. That's part of the deal. But go down the roster of the best coaches that are out there, and they typically don't get blown out, and they typically don't jump jobs. Greg Popovich isn't going anywhere. Steve Kerr is not going anywhere. And on it can go. So we'll circle back on that at about 10:35. Up next, though, the story of the day, clearly the Diamondbacks. Mike Farron will be with us. That is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Our football show tonight, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, 16 airings per week on Fox Sports Arizona. We appreciate the partnership with them before and after the Diamondbacks game. If you have SiriusXM MLB Network Radio, then you know Mike Farron's voice. You know I'm a big fan of his because I have SiriusXM. If you don't have SiriusXM, you should go get SiriusXM. And Mike didn't tell me to say any of this leading him into the show. What I do want to know from you is, and I appreciate you coming on board, when did you know last night could be something special out of Patrick Corbin? What inning was it?
Oh, that's a good question, Brad. I happen to have the scorebook in front of me. I think when he got through the middle of the lineup the second time, the fourth and fifth innings, you know, you start to look at their lineup without Longoria in it last night, the way McCutchen hasn't swung the bat well. And the whole time you're going through it, you're thinking, if he can get through Posey one more time, he's got a really good chance. And, of course, Posey then in the seventh hits that line drive to center that A.J. Pollock made a great recovery on to make the diving catch. And at that moment, you're convinced that it's going to happen. And really, you know, outside of a check swing infield single, it kind of did. I mean, it was a special night. But I would say once he got through the heart of the order the second time, I didn't think that there was really anybody outside of Posey who put together consistently good at-bats against him. He hit two balls hard last night.
I heard your post-game interview with him, and I've seen him interviewed before, but his reaction last night to you was almost priceless. Just total non-assuming, let's give everybody else credit, aw shucks. In a situation like that, and the second time this year he's done it, were you surprised by his reaction to you?
No. Not at all. I mean, I think Patrick's a really humble guy. And I think, you know, he's a team guy. He wants to win. I know there were moments of frustration for him last year, you know, especially through the first half of the season. And, you know, he has taken it upon himself to kind of turn himself back into an all-star caliber pitcher. And, really, since that started Wrigley, that I think was August 1st, where he got knocked around, and that was kind of the end of like the Patrick Corbin, I think, rehabbing from Tommy John surgery became the oh yeah, Patrick Corbin's back moment. I think all of that has kind of played out, and I had a chance to talk to him before opening day. You know, he was excited about getting that opportunity. Finally, you know, like 4 years later, getting the chance to start opening day was a big deal to him, but. He has pitched so well, and really, I mean, all four of his outings, when he takes the field right now, you just have a really good feeling the D-backs are going to win that night.
Yeah, he's making a lot of money, Mike. I mean, it's the business side of this for Patrick Corbin, it's, oh my gosh.
He's a free agent after the year.
Yep. I mean, it's really remarkable. You mentioned Tommy John, so let's get over to Taijuan Walker, and I want to bring Shelby Miller into the conversation because suddenly Shelby Miller, to me, when I heard the Walker stuff yesterday, it's, well, is Shelby going to be around and ready by the time they get to mid-June? But let's go back to Taijuan Walker. What do you make out of this, the UCL injury, And do you believe he's definitely done for the year?
I don't know yet. I mean, I think they've been very careful in the language that they've used to describe what's going on, mm-hmm. right? You never heard the word tear yesterday. You heard UCL injury. And I wonder how much, and I didn't really get a chance to ask this, but I wonder how much of that is intentional in that as soon as you hear the T word with the UCL,
yep.
you instantly think Tommy John surgery. But there are a number of pitchers who have, had what amount to partial, where ligament sprains, right? And they go on to pitch for a number of years or are asymptomatic for forever. I think David Price is one of the latest examples of that, right? He had that last year and he's gone on to pitch. I mean, Irvine Santana had one, I think, 9 years ago, and hasn't had any issues with it since. You know, he's out right now for the Twins because of a finger injury. So I don't want to speculate on it because I don't know, because we don't know. All we've been told is that he's going to get a second opinion. And, we don't know what the first opinion was. You know, was right. the first opinion to suggest surgery or was it to suggest rest and rehab? So there's that. That said, I mean, you are probably looking at a prolonged absence either way, even if it is, even if it is non-surgical. I mean, you're going to be dealing with a guy who's going to miss a significant chunk of time. And then it is trying to fill the void until you get, Shelby Miller back, which should be somewhere around the middle of June.
Yeah, what do you hear about Shelby Miller and how he's coming along, Mike?
Well, I talked to him towards the end of the last homestand just to catch up because I hadn't spent much time with him. I'm a big fan of Shelby. He's a great dude. He was really encouraged. He was going through the point now. So the way they have this scheduled out is you kind of build up, you do some bullpen sessions, and then you take a little bit of a break, and then you go back into the bullpen sessions, and then once you're through, three or four of those, then you start facing hitters in the cage, and then you start talking about a rehab assignment. So we're about 2 months away from his return, which would put him, I would guess, about a month away from a rehab assignment, which means he's just about ready to start facing hitters in live BP sessions. And from all accounts, whether it be from Torrey or the front office or Shelby himself, the rehab has gone very, very well. He has attacked it, and that's kind of the guy he is. He wasn't going to let it get him down. He's in terrific physical shape, and I think he's excited for the opportunity to come back. Now, we just talked about it with Patrick Corbin, right? It took him a while to get back to being the guy he was before the surgery, and there is no linear path to recovery. So it's not a guarantee that Shelby is, what he was at the beginning of last year, even before the injury hit, when he does come back. But I do think it's encouraging that he feels good, that he's throwing pain-free, that everything is great, that he's able to cut it loose, and that he is getting closer and closer to being able to face hitters.
Okay, take people down. We're talking with Mike Farren, two Diamondbacks pre-postgame show hosts. And if you haven't caught him on SiriusXM MLB Network Radio, you are missing out. We appreciate him coming on with us today. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Down on the farm, whether it's this weekend in filling Taiwan's spot or long-term, take me through the farm system and what it looks like right now in terms of immediate help, or maybe somebody who's intriguing to you that you've been keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're one and the same. I think Matt Cook is likely to be the guy. I don't think it's a guarantee, but I think Cook lines up. And Matt Cook, accounted himself quite well in the big leagues at the end of the 15th season. He's made one appearance in the big leagues this year. And really had like blister issues and then a groin injury and a shoulder thing that derailed him last season. But I really like Matt Cook as a back end starter option. I mean, he throws four pitches, all for strikes. He's not afraid of anybody. He's very calm. He's collected on the mound. I don't think he's going to be necessarily a world beater, but I think he's a guy that certainly will give you some quality innings. So I would think that he gets likely gets the first crack at it. I mean, I think the other guy that I'm intrigued by is Taylor Clark, who is, maybe outside of John DePlantier, the top starting pitching prospect in the D-backs organization. And Clark, has shown a little bit of an increase in his strikeout rate this year at AAA. It had a rough start, went 4 2/3 innings the last time. Pitch count got high. I think he ended up getting ejected after he was taken out of the game. But I would think a little bit later on in the summer, if they needed a starter, kind of around the same time that they brought up Anthony Bonda last year, I think he would be an option there. But that would be the other guy that I'm intrigued by. But their depth is interesting because they have Albert Suarez, who was the Rule 5 pick from the Giants. He's got big league time and some success in the big leagues. Troy Scribner, who they claimed on waivers from the Angels, has options and is a guy that's a little bit like Cook, four-pitch mix, throws strikes, competes. He's an undrafted free agent out of Sacred Heart, which is probably most famous for having Bobby Valentine as their athletic director, as anything. But there are some options that are behind there. None of them are guys that have certainly the stuff or the pedigree that Taiwan Walker does, but they are guys that are capable of getting out at the big league level.
You know, I could go through the Souza and Lamb injury stuff, but I've got only a couple of minutes remaining unless there's something there you really want to chomp at the bit on. I'm more interested, from your point of view, what is different this year about this team? I know they made the postseason last year, but they didn't get off to this kind of start, and you could point to pitching, but they had change behind the plate, and I don't know if there's been enough made about change behind the plate, and which was viewed as a real hit when there was a departure and then an addition. You may have another spot, Mike, on this team, but when you get off to a start like this team has, the best in the history of the team, what are you seeing that maybe isn't getting enough attention?
Well, I mean, I think they did kind of get off to this start last year. I mean, they weren't 12-4, but they did have the opening homestand. They were 6-1, and I think they were 4-5 on the first road trip. So, you know, it wasn't like they were off to a bad start last year. They got off to a really strong one. I don't know that there's anything that I see as being, you know, like a huge difference from that standpoint. I mean, I think they're down a little bit offensively without Lamb and Souza. And I think the numbers bear that out, you know, especially over the last 10 days. You know, if you take into the road trip and then last night into account, they have not, you know, they've not hit well. They've scored runs at the right time. They've timed their hits up well. I do think that the bullpen is a little bit more dependable than the one that opened the year last year. And not to take anything away from Tom Wilhelmsen or J.J. Hoover, but those were more power guys that had some issues throwing strikes at times. And I do think that guys like Yoshi Hirano and Brad Boxberger have given a better end-of-game option around Archie Bradley on either side. And I think Fernando Salas has been terrific in his ability to throw strikes and get outs. Has been really welcomed. And so I think that would to me be the biggest thing. And I think it's a way better defensive team than it was a year ago. I mean, I just think that this is a really good group of defenders. I think when Souza comes back, you'll see that he is a good defensive player in right field, but Owings and Dyson are both excellent defenders. And I think Jerrod Dyson's one of the handful of the best outfielders in baseball defensively. And it's not going to show up in the stat line because it's not as easy to quantify, but this team is not going to beat itself very often. They are going to if the ball is in play, they are going to record outs. And I think that is a huge upgrade over what they had for a good chunk of last year where they were a bit deficient on the defensive side.
And before I get you out of here, because you do follow it nationally, I'll step away from the Diamondbacks because you've given us a lot to chew on there. Ohtani or Stanton getting booed every moment in New York. What do you make out of those two stories? Or is there a better national story going in your view here early on than Ohtani? I know last night he had to go early, but take me through those two stories because you do have a national following as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Stanton thing, we actually talked about both those things a fair amount this morning, and the Stanton thing is just laughable. I mean, it's like only in New York, right?
Right.
But granted, he's spammed 20 times in 35 plate appearances at the Yankee Stadium, which is a lot, I think. But, you know, I mean, they're fickle, right? I mean, that's like, they're a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately fan base.
And, sure.
There is no soft landing for Stanton. I have a pretty high degree of faith that he'll get things turned around because this is not the first time he's been through a slump like this. I don't think there's a more exciting story really than Ohtani. I mean, I said this the other day, he's captured the imagination, right? Who dreamed of having a guy that could do this, that could be both a top flight starting pitcher and a damaging hitter. And, he is, you know, like we haven't seen this in a century. And I think it's incredibly exciting. And the way he embraces it and the way he has an idea of how to make the plan work and the fact that he's had success at the highest level in his home country, you know, and Japanese baseball is a pretty high level of baseball. I think gives me hope that he can continue it. But I think the Ohtani story is so fascinating.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? Greg pointed this out last night. You know, now that they have the rain out, he's starting once a week. He's going to stay on Tuesday's schedule. The D-backs play the Angels twice on Tuesdays this year, which means they may get to face Ohtani a couple of times, which is, I mean, kind of scary, but at the same time, it's really cool.
No, it's fun. It's fun. Hey, fun segment. Appreciate the time and the visit as always. Thanks, Mike.
Anytime, Brad. Great to talk to you.
You too. There's Mike Farron with us. Diamondbacks pre-postgame show host, SiriusXM, MLB Network Radio. He is so good. He's so good and so humble. That's what I like about him. So the Suns coaching search, I want to circle back on that because in the thought of if guys start saying no, there's already been one that said no, but I get it. With everything that's lined up out here, you would think this should move rather quickly compared to the other openings that are out there, but maybe it won't, and we'll talk about that next. I'm Brad Sussmat. So I'm going to jump into some NFL here in a bit on the broadcast booth stuff because, well, you know what? I'll do that right now because I'm curious, Eric. Have you been reaching out to Kurt Warner? I know you've been trying to find him for stuff around the draft.
I have. I have been in contact with Kurt.
Yeah, I've been in contact. Has he given you any indication about his broadcast future?
He has not. I have not asked him specifically, but I know earlier this week he was in L.A. doing network stuff.
His name is all over these jobs. The Fox job, the Thursday night job, Carson Palmer auditioned, Arians.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. Some familiar names from the Valley.
Arians. So, I'm thinking, could you see Kurt Warner and Bruce Arians together in a three-man booth?
Yes.
Could you see Carson Palmer and Kurt Warner together in a three-man booth?
No.
Me either. Could I see Carson Palmer in a booth?
No.
Yeah, me either. I'm not quite sure what that's all about.
He isn't eloquent or well-spoken or knowledgeable because he's all three of those. I just don't know if he has the teeth to be, because you do need some teeth to be an analyst.
You have to be able to criticize. But in Kurt's way, when he goes after somebody, he doesn't go after them. He will just say he's better than that or he can make that throw. I've seen him make that throw. He's not going to lay somebody out. I haven't heard him do that. But, you know, a guy like Carson reminds me a little bit of another USC guy, Matt Leinart. So on the surface, when you heard that Matt was going to go in the TV world, it's, wow, he's not going to be very good. Matt's really good in studio because...
Really good in studio.
He doesn't, you and I are like-minded on this, he doesn't really have to go after somebody.
But he has. I have seen him go after it. And it's a little bit different in college than the pros. A little bit different simply because they are, finger quote, amateurs.
Yeah, you don't want to pound on an 18-year-old.
Not too hard. But there's still room when it's time to criticize and be critical of someone's
and compliment
play.
You
have to do that.
You have to be able to in that role. But I think if Carson is in a space where if it's the Bears playing the Lions – and it's a regional game.
Which it will be if he gets one of those jobs.
Sure. Yeah, it's going to be. Okay, so I'll give you a better example. It's Tampa Bay, Carolina.
Yeah, it's the lowest tiered NFL game you can have.
Total regional play just being shown in those two markets versus if it's Cowboys, Packers, it's Troy Aikman. Mm-hmm. And if it's one of those games on a regional basis, you know, when the Cardinals aren't good, we see an awful lot of those guys, the C and the Ds and the Rondé Barbers that are trying to work their way up the ladder.
Right.
C and D broadcast teams. It doesn't mean I'm talking about them as individuals. Okay, there's a difference. I just think Carson being in a space where if Aaron Rodgers has a bad game, is he going to pound on Aaron Rodgers? I can't see it on a national basis.
But I do see Carson Palmer working really hard to be a better analyst.
But he'd be better in studio, wouldn't he?
I think so. I think so. But I just know just from he was a gym rat with the Cardinals as a quarterback.
Sure.
I'm sure in his post-football life, when it involves football, he's going to hit it just as hard as he did when he was, you know, getting ready to play the Seahawks.
You know my deal. I don't care who's doing games, but the game is going to be on with volume. So I will notice if somebody is completely, totally ill-prepared. John Lynch was so good, and maybe because I knew Johnny as a kid mm-hmm. and in high school, and I had affection for him and his family and everything, that I thought he was great. And I knew he was going to kill it up in San Francisco because he's such a football gym rat guy. I was thinking Carson, like his brother Jordan, would go into the quarterback work stuff, not the broadcast booth.
But he would be polished. I mean, you know, not to point fingers at Rondé Barber, but I mean, how many times had he called David Johnson Larry Johnson or called, you know, Larry Fitzgerald Larry Johnson? And those things, I mean, it just is.
It's reps.
And it gets so magnified on TV, especially with social media, because you might not be watching a game. I might not be watching a game. But if I'm out and I'm on Twitter and it hits Twitter, everybody sees it, even though not everybody saw it, if that makes sense.
No, I understand what you're saying. But so it's interesting in Kurt's deal, because when he did the Christmas Day game, and I think we had him on in January, I was pretty direct with him about, so what are you doing here? Your contract's expiring. You were on NBC's Christmas Day game as a loan. Tells me all I need to know. Kurt's very much about Q rating. Kurt's not former football guy. He's done a very good job in some of his projects in showing himself as family guy, which he is, but trying to be more mass appeal than Joe Sixpack. Joe Sixpack probably isn't going to hear Kurt Warner on the C or D game.
And I'm assuming he's going to be coaching again, calling plays at Desert Mountain.
So Desert Mountain starts spring ball next week, right?
Yeah.
So next week. So there's a lot going in. He's been doing this stuff at his house with these players, getting them ready and trained up. I think Christian Kirk was over there. Running some routes with
Kurt. He was.
So Kurt's doing some things behind the scenes that you're not reading or hearing about. But it's interesting to have Kurt, Bruce, Carson all in this space. And they're making decisions on broadcast crews for the coming year. They auditioned Brett Favre for Monday Night Football. And Brett Favre went on social media yesterday to say, I'm no longer, you know, a candidate for that. I don't know. I can't see Brett Favre. I know I'm going long here. I'll get to the baseball stuff or the basketball stuff in the next segment. I can't see Brett Favre being somebody that is going to sit there, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Brett Favre would just say, man, that throw was horrible. That's the type of guy I see Brett Favre. I would see people trying to coach him out of that, which would be unfortunate. We want unfiltered. I want unfiltered. I want unscripted. I do not want NFL PR being crammed down my throat. And unfortunately for some of these analysts, because I've talked with them, some, not the guys I've mentioned, but I've talked to guys that get in that space. A lot of it is, you know, you don't use the word concussion. What are you talking about? There's been a blow to the head, okay? You guys are trying to soften what is reality out there. Don't manage the message. Everybody's trying to manage messages in broadcast booths now. It drives me crazy. I will get to Anthony Davis and the Suns next. I just had I saw a note here about Favre and Warner and Carson, so I went on a tangent here, which I like doing. Back after this timeout. All right, coming up in 10 minutes, it will be Talk to the Lopes. This week, Michael Potter, the longtime radio voice of GCU Athletics, who's done a great job there every week, our partnership with Grand Canyon University. We have Talk to the Lopes. I love Wednesdays. I want to get into Michael's backstory, kind of like where did he start, how did it go for him, and all the sports there. That comes up in a few minutes here on Sports360AZ.com. And we partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. If Robert Sarver gets turned down by Mike Budenholzer, it's going to become a bad look. It seems to me that if you meet with Mike Budenholzer for 2 days, and he's a current coach with Atlanta, which means you'd have to find some way to get him out of his deal, which means Robert would have to find compensation, which to me is something that Robert, being a banker, would not be very good at wanting to do. If that doesn't happen, and you go to Steve Clifford coming here and Frank Vogel coming here and coaches that have been fired already coming here, it's going to be a bad look. If this coaching search drags on for a long time, this seems to be a pretty easy sell. We have Devin Booker. We have a kid, Josh Jackson, who seems like he's figuring things out. We have probably the number one overall pick in the lottery. We're probably going to have, the chances are very good that we have a big man coming here in some way, shape, or form, either Ayton or Bagley. We have cap flexibility. If guys turn down that, then what is the issue? I'm not sitting here taking a shot at Robert today. I'm just saying, Robert, this is pretty simple. you supposedly have this all set up according to your general manager and the timeline. You have it all set up in place. You should have people banging on your doors to come here. Not Earl Watson, who may be the next coach at UCLA if Steve Alford gets blown out. But, you know, we went through that phase. If you have to go re-interview Jay Triano while you're having current standing assistant coaches come here to take a look and to kick the tires on whether this is the job to be at or not, I would like to see coaches that are of big name stature, big game stature, that have coached at the highest level, that have gotten their teams to the playoffs, to say, man, I'm sitting here in X job, and I don't think this is the best place to be. I'll give you an example. Doc Rivers is sitting over there with the Clippers. But with Orlando open, Doc Rivers is probably going to be on the short list to go to Orlando or to kick it around. I would take Doc Rivers on my sideline. I don't know where Greg Popovich's future is. I know it's not with Robert Sarver, so I'm not going to suggest that. I don't know where Mike D'Antoni's future is, but it's not going to be with Robert Sarver. You can't convince guys like that to look at your job. Steve Kerr's not coming back here. Luke Walton is not coming here. I'm looking at current head coaches. If Mike Budenholzer coming to Phoenix, I got it. Holbrook, he's been the assistant. He had a title in Atlanta. It went away. Set up here looks pretty good. Should be a done deal, right? For everybody that wants to support what the Suns are doing, if this drags on and it's more recycled retreads, guys that have been blown out at jobs that aren't very good, it's not good. It just isn't. And so, you know, Robert's blown six guys out of here in 8 years. Numbers don't lie. So it's interesting that Budenholzer would have a two-day interview. I don't know if that two-day interview was he got in at 5 p.m. on Sunday, and he was here until, I don't know, yesterday morning. I don't know the details on that. I don't care to know. I just know that this is pretty obvious. It's a good-looking job in terms of roster and space. When I say roster, the top of your roster, you have two guys to build around the bottom part of your roster, the middle part of your roster. I'm not that impressed. I'm not impressed with Marquise Chriss. I'm not impressed with Dragan Bender. I'm not impressed with their growth. I'm certainly not impressed with Alex Len for where they drafted him. I'm not impressed with their guards. I look at what New Orleans is doing. The fact that Alvin Gentry is down there in New Orleans, it's the smallest market in the league. If DeMarcus Cousins doesn't go down with a terrible injury, and New Orleans is a real factor. They figured out how to win. They figured out how to put a team together. And I'm watching them just handle Portland. Just blow right through them. And Anthony Davis, best big man in the league right now. Stick him down low and let him do his thing. You know, Boston, everybody thought Boston because Kyrie's not around. Jaylen Brown had 30 last night. And Boston's going to find a way to move through that series. You look over at Philadelphia. Philadelphia is interesting to me. I'm trying to get into Miami. I watched Dwayne Wade. I'm expecting this long gray beard that he's going to step on when he tries to do a crossover. I can't believe he's still in the league, and this might be it for him. But New Orleans is fun to watch, too. That's the other side of it. They're a fun team to watch. And when you're building a franchise, let's just talk about this and be straight with each other. When you have a big man down low that can be a horse and knows that he can score, and that's Anthony Davis, okay? And then you have a guard like Drew Holiday who can make the plays happen, make the shots, good vet, been around, tough, get after it. When you have a guard and you have a big, you do a lot of damage. When you have a wing, now the wing's got to be surrounded by other players, but typically it is the what do you have at the guard position and what do you have down low? The wing is a complementary player. The Suns are set up in a way of what do you have at your point guard position? The answer is nothing. What do you have in your big position? The answer is nothing or very little, very, very little. And they may say we have assets and all that, but man, if this deal drags on and a guy like Mike Budenholzer says, who has a good track record, he's a Pop disciple. Pop sits there and whines about Kawhi Leonard every day now. I don't know where Kawhi Leonard's going to end up, but Budenholzer's been his own man. He stepped away after 17 years of being with Greg, and And I think he'd be a fine hire here. But if we're dragging this deal out, unless it's working through the compensation side, so far it's been a pretty uninspiring list of names of candidates. It really has. Sports360AZ.com, we partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Our television show tonight, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona, before and after the Diamondbacks-Giants game. That is tonight, 16 airings per week. We appreciate the partnership with FSAZ. Edwin Rodriguez is our chairman of the board. Eric, as always, produces, the great Eric Sorensen. Have yourself a great Wednesday. Time now for Talk to the Lopes every Wednesday, year-round, by the way, now. GCU and ourselves are going to do this year-round, not even during the summer months because there's so much going on campus. Every Wednesday, we talk about what's going on at GCU, coaches, administrators, and broadcasters today. Now, Michael Potter has been the voice of GCU, and this isn't meant as disrespect to Barry Butel, but Michael has been doing games. I remember Michael doing games all the way back in the Russ Pennell era and in basketball, and he's an alumnus, so we have to have Michael on. We probably should call this Talk to the President or something. No offense to Brian Mueller, because you've been on campus for how many years now, Michael?
I graduated in 1990. I've been doing the play-by-play now for my, I'm completing my ninth season.
Your first event you broadcast to GCU was what?
I broadcast, well, you know, I did some games back in the 95 to 98 when Gil Stafford was the head coach and the Lopes were in the WAC, back in the old WAC, back in the day for baseball. So I did some games out there. I remember actually calling when the Lopes won the WAC and went to play in the postseason in Tony Gwynn Stadium in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And we lost our first game to Fresno State, and a guy named Jeff Weaver struck out, I think, 19 Lopes at that time. So it didn't go well for the Lopes. We only lost, I think, 2-1 in that game. So I remember calling him all the way back back in the mid-90s. But first game since coming back was Russ Pennell's second ball game out in Anaheim at the Disney Invitational out there. And oddly enough, the first game I called, I believe it was the first game, maybe the second, he played Kentucky, and Todd Lee was the head coach of that team.
Which, of course, Todd just left. Michael Potter's with us. This is Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk GCU here on Sports360AZ.com. Also, we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. They watch and carry the show as well. How did your break come about to become a voice of the Lopes? Who approached you? Did you approach them? What? How did it go about? Kate, take me through your process.
Well, going way back, right? Keith Baker was the longtime in the athletics department there and was the voice of GCU for many, many years on radio. I was working at a small radio station in the Valley, 1280 KHEP, that was kind of making the shift from Christian broadcasting into talk radio. Had the likes of Ollie North and Michael Medved and those guys on the air. And so they asked me to come in and do the sports radio broadcasting, kind of start that up. So I was in doing that, and we approached, it was Keith back then in the mid-90s, about doing some GCU games on the radio, and asked him if he wanted to call him. He was the AD at the time and said, no, I didn't have time to do it. So I kind of got them to do the games on 1280 and became the voice that way. And then, you know, once Brian Mueller came around, and you could really tell he had a lot of big plans for not only the school but the athletic program, I reapproached Keith when I saw that they had hired Russ Pennell, who had that great run with U of A, and said, hey, I bet you guys are going to start doing some radio broadcasting again. I'd like to be in the loop. And it just kind of snowballed from there.
Who mentored you in your early days of broadcasting? Where did you get your style? Was it listening to Al McCoy, let's say, or maybe someone else?
Well, you know, I grew up as a huge baseball fan. So Denny Matthews back in Kansas City and Fred White, I listened to them a ton. And then, of course, when I got out here, you know, listening to Al McCoy, listening to, Vin Scully, I would hear him, and I would never compare myself to those guys, because if you try to be like them, you fail mightily. But you take tidbits here and there, and just the way they did it. I tell you, a guy who gave me some great advice when I first started, I reached out to him. You know, I talked obviously to Keith Baker about some of that stuff. You know, Al McCoy, listen to him a lot. Listen to him do some D-backs games back in the day. Mm-hmm. When they first started. He filled in a couple of times. I thought he was fantastic at baseball as well. So kind of a culmination of all those guys. But, you know, I mean, you've done enough of it too, Brad. You hear guys and you kind of take tidbits here and there, but you got to be more true to yourself and kind of have your own style as well. So I think everybody's kind of adds on to that stuff.
What is the moment, if you care to share, that you stepped in it? You stepped on the banana, you stepped in a pile of, and you're like, wow, how did that happen? Was it a technical breakdown or never got on the air? We all have those stories. Michael, come on.
Yeah.
You know, when was one of yours?
Okay, anybody under the age of, like, what, 35 isn't going to understand this, but you'll get it, right? Doing some high school, Christian high school football. We also did some just regular high school football. And many times, and it was all technical, right? You
sure.
had to have a spool of telephone line that was at least 300-400 yards long, and you had to find the nearest phone connection, which was usually the 80s office and a fax machine. And so you would unplug the fax machine, plug in the phone, string it, you know, 400 or 500 yards from the office over to the football stadium. I remember at Tempe High School, I was stringing it out a window that we left open, up and over where the people were walking to get in. And about four times during that broadcast, I would get a page from my folks in the studio saying, hey, you're off the air. And I'd have to put the headset down, track that phone line. And typically it was somebody would walk into the office, need to send a fax, that had unplugged you, send the fax, and forget to plug you back in. So that happened quite regularly.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Michael Potter's, well, that's a great story. Michael Potter, the radio voice of GCU Athletics. All right, let's go down the list of this season. Todd Lee leaves. He did an awful lot with Dan. I think it's probably time for him to be a head coach. This is nothing more than that, in my view. What did you make out of men's basketball? I saw you up in Vegas. I'm not going to bug you when you're broadcasting, but what did you make out of Vegas, the run, and Todd leaving?
Well, I mean, you know, it was a nice run, but as Coach Marley said it, you know, the goal was to win it, and we didn't win it, and he was very disappointed in that, and I don't think the goal's changed at all. So if you ask Coach Marley, it was a disappointing season. I mean, you know, you take a step back and you say, gosh, third year in a row, you won 22-plus games, you know, the best record ever in a transitioning era for a university. But, you know, Coach Marley said he came here because he wanted to win the WAC, and they've not done it yet in 5 years of trying. So to him, it was still a failed season. You know, Todd Lee leaving, I mean, that's obviously going to be a hit to the program just because he was so good and did so much for the program. You know, he would even tell you he's replaceable, so I'm sure they're out looking and scouring to find somebody. But I just think it was so good for Coach Marley. The big knock, if you remember back, 5 years ago, Brad, when they hired Dan, was he'd never coached before as a head coach. And he'd been away from the college game so long. So he, Brian Mueller, Jerry Colanzo really set out to find a guy who understood college basketball and could kind of come alongside Dan and mentor him through that process. And Ty Lee was a perfect fit. I think Todd's going to be great up at South Dakota. He's a fantastic coach, great X's and O's guy. And the thing that I think he instilled in the program was preparation. And, you know, Dan does that too, preparation, hard work. But Todd was so good at breaking down an opponent, putting out scouting reports and game planning, helping Dan game plan to beat the deficiencies. So I think they're going to have a hard time replacing him. But I think he'll do really well up there. And I think, he's left a mark on the program, that what he's done in the last 5 years alongside Dan.
Flip it over to Nicole Powell. I think in year one, really amazing what she was able to accomplish on the women's side.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw a game that they played early in the season, and, man, they just did not look like they were on the same page. The kids didn't look like they had bought in, and you can see that, right? When you see the kids play, they go, man, they're just not bought into this whole system. And then you switch that to when they got up to Vegas, and they were bought in, they were locked in, they played hard, they played good. I mean, Bree Mobley, obviously, you have to have a great player, but Jessica Juski, they were really bought in. So I thought, Nicole, the same type of thing as with Dan coming in. She's had success at the highest levels because, obviously, number one, she's incredibly talented and gifted athlete, but she just worked her tail off to get there, you know, and never accepted mediocrity. And I look around at a lot of the coaches, and we have some high-level coaches at GCU, and some that play at the highest levels with Dan and Nicole and you know, Andy.
Yep.
And I just think they just don't allow their athletes to accept mediocrity, and that's a big switch from high school because a lot of times in high school, you know, you're just good because you're good, and you don't need to really work that hard. So I think they bought in, and I was really impressed with what she built the end. And I'm into that year, and I'm looking forward to seeing when she gets some of her own recruits in and gets them in the program for 4 years, what she can do.
You mentioned Andy and Andy Stankiewicz in the baseball program. I had him on a couple of weeks ago, and he sounded like he was taking a 2x4 and beating himself between the eyes. And you know, and I look at it and say, look, you won your 200th game. You've got Jake Wong. You've got some draftable players. You're playing a really difficult schedule, and it's only the midpoint of the season. This was right before the U of A game. What do you make out of where the season has gone for Andy and the job that he's doing?
Well, I think the world of Andy. I think he has done a fantastic job of building a program, and I think, you know, especially in baseball, I think when you're recruiting kids, you want to be able to point to some people that you've developed. Mm-hmm. And you look at Jake Wong, you mentioned him. I mean, he's a kid. Yeah, he was recruited out of high school, but, you know, not hugely recruited. And how he's progressed now, Andy and his staff has developed him over 3 years. Garrison Schwartz, who really wasn't even recruited out of high school much. And in 3 years, Andy developed him into the kid that, you know, got drafted by the Braves playing. Well, Chad De La Guerra, probably just a phone call away from being called up and playing for the Boston Red Sox, and many people think he'll get called up at some point this year. And he spent 2 years in that program. So I think he's establishing himself as a great number one talent evaluator, but also a talent developer, which is huge in baseball. Mm-hmm. I think he's doing a great job there. And kind of like he does every year, you know, he plays a really, really hard non-conference schedule that you look at the record and you go, man, these guys must stink. They're getting clobbered by everybody. And then you get into conference, and last year, what, 20-4, and this year leading the conference. And this is a stat that I think we say it, I say it on the air a lot, and I think people maybe don't realize how big it is. You know, Andy Stankiewicz has won 13 consecutive conference series, and that is the longest mark in the nation mm-hmm. after Utah went up and beat Oregon State. So, you know, what he does is he teaches his guys, hey, it's all about consistency and it's all about winning the series. And they've done it better than anybody in the country the last year and a half.
Before I get you out of here, Michael, when you look at this year and you look around the athletic department and you're out there as not just the broadcaster of these games on radio, but you see the other teams and the other coaches, is there a story or two, a player or two or a coach or two that you look at and you say, you know, Brad, this person really has done some remarkable things and hasn't gotten a whole lot of run or a whole lot of play? Sometimes guys like yourself that are embedded within the athletic department see that off-beaten path story that you say, that person deserves a lot more credit than what they're getting. Do you have one or two?
Well, you know, I think when we talk about the big teams, right, that we've talked about,
sure.
Baseball, basketball, the softball. I mean, I think Ann's doing a phenomenal job over there. When I look at what Tom Flood's doing with the track and field program, I mean, just really kind of running through the WAC every year. And I look at what they're doing over there with the swimming and diving program. I mean, I think your first, you know, individual national champions are going to come out of one of those two programs and do well. And, you know, Matt Worley is a guy that had incredible success as a player in men's volleyball. Throughout his career, was like one of the top D3 men's volleyball setters in the nation and played on the national teams and things. I think he's doing an unbelievable job. And, you know, there's not a ton of D1 men's volleyball out there, but the teams that are really, really good. And he's playing all of them and playing them well and in the new conference they're in. So, you know, I just think that right now the shape across the board is really good, and I think they've got some really great coaches in place. And I think in the next 3 or 4 years, as they get a chance to really build their programs up, I think it's going to be really exciting to watch, not just the marquee programs, but all those other programs as well.
That's what it's all about. Good stuff. Appreciate the time and the visit, Michael. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Brad. Appreciate it, man.
Good stuff. Michael Potter there, the radio voice of the GCU Athletic Department. Good content there. And that this week is Talk to the Lopes.